Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on this fine Friday Eve evening where we are talking all things Final Fantasy 16. But before I introduce our very handsome and charismatic guest, we must first give thanks to these amazing sages of the lodge, those who donate as little as $1 a month to keep my nonsense going. If that interests you, you've heard it a million times. There's links in the episode description to guide you. You can become a YouTube channel member. But as I always say, all of that is just a bonus. All I ask is you come here and hang out. And today, while we're hanging out, we're talking FF16 with none other than the amazing Andy Brew. Andy, dude, what is going on? I guess before we let you speak, we don't have the most stable connection between the two of us, but the audio's coming through, the video's coming through. We're going to make it work. Look, maybe we'll just say this is a throwback. We got 16-bit Andy here with us today. But what's going on,
the
man?
Potato quality Andy coming at you from 4 years ago. I'm good, man. I'm glad to be back. Final Fantasy 16 is right around the corner, I am here for it.
We got a lot to talk about. You know, originally when we thought this through, we thought about really just kind of doing a wish list. But upon realizing that this game has already started to answer a lot of those wishes, we figured we also expanded into a theory and open discussion sort of thing. So maybe we could just start. What were your first impressions of FF16 when that trailer dropped a few years ago? And how are you feeling about it right now?
Well, I was already sold on the game when I saw the Chocobo, because I was like, oh, it's Final Fantasy 16. So I was like, I'm a Final Fantasy shill. I was going to buy it anyway. But to see it from that first trailer, it immediately set the tone of just, you know, it's a much darker tone. And we've seen dark in Final Fantasy before. We've had Type Zero. We've had, I can't think of any. I'm more on the top of my head right now, but Type Zero is the first one I think of.
I say 14 with Shadowbringers can get quite dark. Yeah.
I think I'm really looking forward to, like, I have a soft spot for 15. That was actually my first Final Fantasy game. And I really love that game. But I'm really looking forward to having a Final Fantasy game with good combat. You know? And it just, like, even just from the first trailer alone, like, we didn't even really see much. But from what we saw, it was like, oh, this already looks fun. And then, like, from then on to a couple years later with the most recent state of play, like I was telling Landy before in the pre-roll, like, dude, like every time they show off something new about the gameplay, I see something I've never seen before. Yeah. Like I see something I've never seen. And I'm like how much potential does this combat have? Like how much can you do with the combat and with the gameplay? So yeah, my first impressions were very, very strong. I was already hooked in by the story because it's like this icon war, right? And that's very interesting to me. You know, it's a Final Fantasy that is summon icon focused, right? And like that's, and the fact that what it seems like is, from how I look at it, like all these nations are under one icon and they're all going to end up going to war against each other. Some might have alliances with others. I'm in for the ride, and I think Yoshida even said in his most recent state of play, you know, these, at least the icon battles, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit, he wants to make it feel like this roller coaster ride of an experience, and that's what every trailer has felt like so far, and I love roller coasters, so I'm here for it. Yeah,
I think this approach too, of taking something like the summons, which, you know, obviously, as you know, if you're watching this, I'm sure you're well aware, every Final Fantasy game is different, but there's always this underlying lore that's consistent, whether it be chocobos, whether it be Moogles, whether it be the summons. And I love when a game like this will take something that's consistent across those games like summons and not necessarily flip it on its head, but bring it center stage. Be like, no, these aren't just going to be summons you bring into battle. Like, got a lot of love for Remake. Probably my favorite Final Fantasy game to come out in the last 10 years. But, you know, the summons aren't really anything important. They're not that important to the story. They're just something you unlock and can bring into battle. Whereas what they're doing here is like, no, these are at the center of the plot. And they're not only at the center of the plot, they're at the center of who these characters are. And, you know, I've anticipated, too, that maybe the summons that are attached to the characters are a foreshadowing or a reflection of the archetype that character is going to live through. Right?
Yes.
Like Clyde. Go for it.
Well, I was going to say, it reminds me of one of your more recent theory videos that you made talking about Joshua. I love that they're not just summons. They're not just these like these godlike cosmic beings. No, like every summon has a dominant. And so it makes it more personal.
Grounded.
Every summon. Yes. And so I kind of love that. I don't know much more in terms of like, you know, how like the icons awaken inside the dominance. Like if it's just because like I think reading online, it was like, well, Joshua at birth, you know, the Phoenix awakened in him. Some awakened later than others. It was your video talking about Joshua and is like the tale of death and rebirth and how his icon is he's the dominant for the Phoenix. And in Final Fantasy, you know, what do you use? What item do you use to revive people? You use Phoenix Downs. And so could we see, honestly, like what I think is going to happen is I think because we're going through three different time periods of Clive's life, his teens, 20s, and 30s,
I love, by the way, a story that's going to take place over decades. Yeah. That means we're going to see some stuff, man.
And I think what could potentially happen, here's like a theory, is I think in the teen timeline, because I think it's going to start off in his 20s. I think the opening shot is going to be the opening shot that we got in the Awakening trailer. And it's going to start off with the guys like, follow me, you know, at the beginning of the state of play, if you watch the state of play. I think that's how it's going to start. And I think it's going to go back to have some flashbacks to kind of build like, you know, kind of put the pieces together of like how we got there. And then the final time skip, that's going to be the whole last part of the game. That's how I think it's going to go. And I think what could happen is I think because obviously, like if you look at it, like Clive looks to be like, he definitely looks a lot more, what's the word? I don't want to say like gloomy, but like in the 20s time skip as to what I think it is. But I think what's going to happen is I think Joshua actually will die in teen Clive era. Mm-hmm. Clive is going to be living out his life in this war during this middle time. And then he's going to find Joshua again because Joshua is somehow going to be reborn. Maybe it's just the nature of being the dominant for the Phoenix. I don't know. And then that's just going to happen later. So that's going to go. But I mean, there's a lot, man.
Yeah, dude, there's so many different ways that you know, it can go. And, you know, whether we're looking at the potential of what happens to Joshua, I've seen some theorize that, you know, he, in his death, he'll be like locked into this perma state of the Phoenix and the Phoenix almost becomes something that needs to be hunted down. You know,
that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's like, and you know, they talk about, you know, in the PAX East presentation, they talk about how Clive is going to have this thirst for vengeance. He's on a quest for vengeance, and I think that's where the Ifrit of it all plays into. You know, the flames of vengeance burning in your heart. But they also mention that somewhere down the road, he's going to let go of that vengeance. Like in his 30s, he's no longer on a quest for vengeance. He's going to find something new to go on a quest for or to long after or something else that's going to motivate him. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean he comes to terms with Joshua's death? Does that mean that Joshua's come back to life in some way? I don't know. You know, like we're kind of laying out.
He's come back to life. And like you said, like he's come back to life, but like something happened where like he had to hunt him down or something, you know, something else happened. I don't know.
But there seems to also be like there's not just like an Ifrit, there's like a dark Ifrit. Right, and almost wonder if these
Yeah, there's two Ifrits.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
It makes you
Which
wonder.
Which is interesting, because we don't really know, I mean, we don't know anything about that, like, at all. It's like, why is there two Ifrits? And even in the first trailer, the one guy was like, it's a second icon of fire, because obviously Joshua was the icon of fire, being the Phoenix. And, you know, in previous, and I think this is also something that I is very much interested in me about this story, is that because in Final Fantasy in general, Ifrit is like he's the rebellious one. He's the one that's kind of labeled as the villain. But in this one, it's, I don't want to say it's not going to be that way because I still think it is, but it's interesting that Ifrit kind of feels like he's at the center of all of this. And the I don't want to say fact because I don't actually know, but like the idea that you will probably be controlling Ifrit the most, like you will be controlling Ifrit for the majority, like a good chunk of this game through Clive, is so interesting to me because Ifrit has always been kind of labeled as like the rebellious one, you know, the one that is kind of the more antagonistic one out of all of them, and
which is where I think that quest for vengeance comes, right? I think that's where it kind of fits with him because, you know.
Yeah.
The quest for vengeance is not a noble pursuit. You know, it's at the end of the day, a pretty selfish pursuit. It's nothing benevolent, you know? But, you know, I think before maybe we spiral too far into theories, because, you know, I know I got plenty of those I want to bring up.
Yeah, sure.
what are some of the things, what's on the wish list? Again, there, a lot of what the trailers and these presentations of showing are already kind of satisfying my palate. But what are some of the things we haven't seen yet that you want to see from this game?
Man, I mean, Landy, I'll be honest, you know, there was only really one thing on my wish list.
Oh, boy.
It was just to pet the dog, and we were going to do that. So we can just end the podcast right here, and I'm good.
Hey, it's a quickie. It'll be a YouTube short.
Yeah, upload it to TikTok, you know? No, but all jokes aside, I mean, yeah, that is great, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited for Torgul because dog. But
Doge.
I think... Oh man, like we were kind of, it's so hard to like compile, I guess, a quote unquote wish list, you know, for this game, because I feel like everything that I really wanted, I've been seeing in the trailers. Like I want like a solid character driven story that's dark and gritty and that's going to hit me in the feels. And I think we're going to get that. I want like a game with solid gameplay that feels good to play, that's gonna take, you know, in my opinion this game has the potential to take the action RPG genre to like the complete next level if it hasn't been there already, and we're getting that, like everything that we, gameplay wise, it's like I feel like I've seen something new every single time. Yes, you can pet the Torgul. I love that. I just saw that. I like turn-based in games as long as it's like immersive, right? Like I've always enjoyed like the various combat systems of Final Fantasy has to offer, but I gotta say, I think I'm the most excited for this combat system because it's like, I personally thrive off the action, like the fast paced action, you know, and I'm just really, I'm looking forward to actually getting it in my hands and playing it and seeing what it feels like. I think, story wise, what I would want is I would like, because you can have, I feel like you could have a great story, but the story won't be as effective if the pacing is terrible. And that was a problem I had with Final Fantasy 15 because I love that game, but there's a lot of things where I'm like,
it's all over the place.
I think it's a great story, but like when you get to Altitia, like, and I won't spoil anything, but like, I should probably stop at Altitia. When you get to a certain point in the game, right? there's a certain point that you get to in the game, and then after like a specific chapter, it's completely linear the rest of the time. Like you're locked into basically just playing through the story. And that's something I really didn't like about 15. And I don't think they're gonna do that here, you know,
I don't
because
think so either.
I haven't, I've only like stuck my toes into A Realm Reborn with like Final Fantasy 14. So I'm not even at like the crazy stuff, but I hear you talk about FF14 all the time, and I know Yoshida is behind that as well. And just the praises that I hear about it's, you know, the story with like these expansions.
It's the best
And
part of the
here,
game.
yeah,
It's the
and so
story.
hearing that, I'm like, you know, I don't really have too many doubts that the story and the pacing won't be good if Yoshi P's behind it. You know, again, just from what I've heard.
Yeah,
So
I think
yeah.
if there's one thing with this game that no one needs to worry about, it is the narrative, it is the plot. I think, you know, the end of the day, I think one of the things that helps Final Fantasy XIV hit as hard as it does is that you spend a lot of time with that cast of characters. I see Kevin in the chat yelling Yshtola, who there's a reason Yshtola has been catapulted to like one of the most popular characters in the series. But you know, I think what 14 has going for it
I
is
know who she is, and I haven't even met her yet. At
cat
least
girl,
I don't
everybody
know.
loves a
Maybe I
cat
have.
girl.
Yeah.
Cat
She's the
girl
cat girl.
scientist. Everybody likes it.
Yeah.
But you know, you end up spending so much time with these characters, and when things start to come to fruition in the later ends of the campaigns, particularly Shadowbringers and Endwalker, it just hits you in the gut because you feel like you've been with these characters forever. And I think, you know, obviously that's unique to an MMO. It's a game that's literally gone on for 13 years at this point. 16 doesn't have that same luxury, but that's why while we won't be playing it linearly for 13 years, they're going to take you on a narrative that's going to last decades to in my opinion, to try and emulate that same effect so that you'll feel like you've been with Clive and the party for 20 years, and then when you get to that end game and the emotional climaxes come, you're gonna get hit in the gut because you're like, I've known them since they were kids, man. Like, it
I've
just
only played 40 hours of this game, but I've
it's
known him
felt
since
like
he was a
40
baby.
years.
40 hours. It's been 40
It's been
years.
40 years, but I think that's one of the things. But if I were to say what my wish list is, one, I need some death. I hate to be.
Yes.
If you're gonna be rated M, it can't be just because you want blood. I want to see.
Yes.
This is supposed to be a game based on like a lot of the war-torn eras of European
And I
history.
think we're gonna get that,
I think
considering
we're gonna. Yeah.
what the whole focus of the game is, which is this massive war
Yeah.
between all these nations.
Show. Do not sugarcoat the harsh reality of war. And I think I, you know, I've recently done a video on who I think is gonna die. And I think Cid is a goner. I think if I were to make a prediction, I think Cid is a goner. I think Hugo might be a goner.
You want to know what I think?
Are you going to say Torgal? Because that's what I was going to say next. I think Torgal's in trouble.
I think Torgal is going to be the Aerith of Final Fantasy 16.
Oof.
Because Torgal is going to be
Oof.
with you. And I mean, Torgal is like he's the party member that stays with you the whole time. Because what they've said, and of course, also reading just like on the website, you know, you have party members who cycle in and out based off of like where you're at in the story, but Torgal is always there the whole time. So for them to rip that away from you,
Would hurt.
it would. It would
Hurt.
hurt. Yes. And
Immensely.
it's like, I want to hurt. But I also don't, you know, because I'm already attached to this dog. I haven't even played the game, you know? Like, that's
And
just what dogs do.
I think alternatively, I think there's also a chance that Torgal is the dominant of Fenrir. I think something like that is possible too to look out
Oh,
for.
yo, I never thought of that.
Yeah,
Oh,
because
that's so
dude,
sick.
Yoshida said something in an interview that has stuck with me when he
That's
was like,
so sick.
dude, he was like, FF16 is not just the story of Clive, it's also the story of Torgal. He's like, this is not just a Clive
Oh,
journey.
I
Yeah,
must have missed
dude.
that interview.
I'm starting to think that that's a possible case.
Oh, that's so sick. Oh, I can't stop thinking about that now. That's all I want. That's all I want.
There's the
We're
wish
done.
list. There's the wish
There's the
list.
wish list.
There it is.
Yeah, that's wow. Yeah. No, keep talking more about that. I want to hear
I mean,
more.
I don't have much more to say other than, like, I think there's a lot of surprises in store for that. Umbra is asking in the chat, what if Jill kicks the bucket? You know, I actually think Jill might be safe.
I think so too. I
Call
don't know
me, it's
why.
just a vibe. What are
Yeah.
you feeling?
I don't know. I have a good feeling about Jill. I don't know. Like I don't know. I think you know what I really like is, we can make theories about who could die, who's going to be saved. And what I like about this is that we don't know. And I think that's a good thing
No
'cause
one
it's
feels
like
safe.
no one feels safe. You like no I don't I feel like nobody actually has plot armor. And I
That's a
love that.
great point. That is a great point.
Like even Clive and
I give Clive
Joshua,
plot armor because they're going to try and sell his DLC.
yeah,
So,
sure.
so I'll give him a little plot armor. I'll give him a little
Sure.
bit.
Which actually brings me to another thing on my wish list.
Here we go.
I would love to see DLC for this game, kind of like they had with Final Fantasy 15, where you play as you have for each character. And in 15, it was a little bit different because it was like at one point in the story, one of the characters breaks off, and then you kind of the DLC is you play as them during that time where they're separate from the party. I think it would be really cool, especially because we've seen that like you're walking around as Joshua at one point in the game. It would be great to have a DLC for like each of the dominants.
Yes,
You
episode
know?
you were with
Now,
the episodes, right?
yeah. Episode Benedicta.
Yeah.
Episode Rock Guy. I can't remember his name. Baldilocks, the Rock Titan. What's his name?
Oh, Hugo.
Hugo, yeah, episode Hugo. It would I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
And it just to kind of whether it's to give us more perspective on them as a character and to understand them more as a character and maybe their motives as to why they're fighting in Final Fantasy 16, or even to have something like them at a certain point in the FF16 story and just playing as them and seeing like how they feel and like just getting that a more variety of a gameplay experience. I don't know. I think that's something eventually that I would really want to see come out of this game. But the DLC should not feel like it's fixing the game, you know?
Correct.
And
I think
I don't feel
yeah.
like that's going to be a problem with this game, but there have been DLCs for games that I love dearly that I've played in the past that feel like it's just like damage control. It's just, it's like now this is the game, right? Like if Final Fantasy 15 would have if
If
the
Royal
Royal
Edition was
Edition
launched
would
and
have came
Royal,
out,
yeah.
it would have been great. I don't think it would have been incredible. Like I compare like the Royal Edition to 15 to like Advent Children Complete. Or like they add like just a little bit enough to where it doesn't make it incredible, but it makes it significantly better. And so I'm hoping that if they do DLC with 16, that won't be the case. But I have a good feeling it won't be because like again, just the vibe that I'm getting and with Yoshi P being on it, I have a very good feeling about just the overall how this game is going to do overall.
Yeah, me too. I think what would I put on my wish list is going off something you just said about like you can't have a DLC that fixes it or feels like damage control. They've been sitting on this game for a while. They said they've spent the last year doing nothing but polishes. I will say this
Yeah,
needs to be.
which is a great sign. That's a
Yes.
great that is so comforting to me because there's nothing more painful to me than playing a game that feels unfinished.
Yeah.
And I'm loving that they're just taking their time
Well, they
with
need
it.
to,
I
because let's be
love
honest, the Final Fantasy series has a pretty bad track record right now of
that.
needing those fixes, right? Whether
Sure.
it's 14, which I love dearly, but that game needed a lot of work to get it up and running. And then 15, like you're saying, which needed a lot of work to really get it up and running. And the fact is, like, if you were a day one FF15 player, you boot up that game now, it feels different. The story structure is different. Like, it's literally just had to get fixed. And like, even games like 13, which I do love 13, but it really took them, from what I'm told, really took them until Lightning Returns to get like the full thing rolling on all cylinders. So to me, I think the most important thing this game needs to pull off is sort of break this mold. And day one, it feels complete. Any patches it needs are very minor. And that the next big chunk of work is bringing us a DLC. Not, oh, hey, in 6 months, they fixed the difficulty scaling and they fixed... No, we want this thing day one ready to go. You've been polishing it for a year. It needs to look like it. It needs to feel like it. That would at least be my recommendation. Give me 1 second. I just want to turn my fan off, but...
Oh, you're good.
You're free to run the mic.
Yeah. Well, I'll run it. I'll take it and I'll run with it. But I was actually just going to say, wow, that was fast. You were so fast. Oh my gosh. You're so fast.
I am so fast. I am so fast.
You're so fast. What I was going to say was, especially playing, going off of what you said, especially now, because, you know, this is because of the turn and the shift that Final Fantasy as a whole is taking with just the way the game's played, you know, because people, there's so many people who are like, this isn't my Final Fantasy, you know, like it's live action combat. Like, what is this? Like, it's like this, what happened to Final Fantasy? And I'm like, buddy, if you want to go that route, then Final Fantasy hasn't been Final Fantasy since like 2009. So I don't know where you've been for 14 years. Right. But I am glad that it is, they are taking their time, especially with the shift that Final Fantasy as a whole is taking, because it is evolving, and I think in a very good way, if you ask me.
I think so too. I mean, look, part of what's always been part of the Final Fantasy brand is that every game you're getting something new, you're getting something fresh that is not connected to the previous entry. And, you know, for the longest time, that used to just be the case with story. But then FF7 came along and was like, hey, we're going to depart from this sort of medieval fantasy vibe, and we're going to do some sci-fi. And then you saw the series really, really played with that. And now you have this sort of back and forth of sci-fi and fantasy. Not only is this game like a full-on return to sort of that medieval fantasy vibe, but the gameplay is just like an absolute departure from anything else that we've gotten, to the point that like you have party members, but you're going to have virtually, from what it looks like, not a whole lot of control over them.
You're just controlling Clive. Yeah, I think, like, from what I've seen, it's like...
You can give some commands. You can give some commands. You can give Torgo
commands, but the other party members that join you, they are going to act on their own.
Well, I guess that's what I'll add to my wish list.
Yeah.
I need some really good AI for the party members. You know?
I was thinking about that, too, because it would be nice to be able to give other companions commands, or you don't have to like play as them like you're that far, but like just to, like, give them commands even if they're only there temporarily. But if I'm not going to be able to do that, then the AIs have to be good. You know, and you know what also would be kind of cool, I would actually be down just as like an whether it's an extra mode in the game or if it is something that you can toggle on and off, if you can just like take out party members completely and take out Torgo completely and challenge yourself by just doing like Clive only runs, I think that'd be fun. Like, that's something that I did when I played Stranger of Paradise, was I would like go through the levels with my party, but I wanted to try to fight the bosses on my own to see if I could do it. And that was something it was a fun challenge that I really enjoyed. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's something I would like to see too. I'd like to see them mix a lot of that up. I know there's going to be like a online scoreboard and stuff like that. And like they showed at the PAX East presentation that, you know, you're going to have this hideout hub that you go back to, and there's going to be a lot of different gameplay modes, not a lot of, but several different gameplay modes you can sort of engage in while you're in that hub. I guess the other thing that I would really want to see, you know, I have a lot of confidence in the main cast. I really think the main cast will all be like really, really good character arcs, really good, you know, nothing that doesn't contribute to the story, nothing just because. But what I really want to see is I want to see some memorable NPCs from all these different towns. You know, that's something I think Remake did well, but Remake really was just one big hub. But it's not something we've seen in a mainline Final Fantasy game in a while, excluding 14. 14 does that very well, but I almost feel like with the 14 team working on this game, you know, to kind of depart the two of them. But like with FF13, which it's crazy to think that that's one of our most recent mainline titles, there's not one memorable, in my opinion, not one memorable NPC from any of those towns. The towns are dead.
So what's an example? Can you give me an example of like a super memorable like NPC? Like off the top of your head?
Andrea Rodea.
Yeah. Just the name itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The name.
You're right.
The character, the presentation, yeah. Boom. Like somebody mm-hmm. like that would be a great, or, you know, just to keep it in the spirit of FF7, Bugenhagen, you know,
yeah.
at Cosmo yeah. Canyon.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see some more things, some more characters like that. Let me see. And I guess what I want to see, I know, you know, this was something that gave him a lot of flack. Yoshida mentioned that, hey, you know, these characters don't have time for Blitzball. But I do want to see some slice of life stuff. You know, while this game very serious, wartime, focused, determined, I kind of want to see maybe just Clive and Jill go for a walk and talk about some things.
Yeah. And, you know, like, also... Final Fantasy has always had a goofy side to it.
Yes.
You know? And so it's really hard for me to picture something like that with this game, but it could even just be in the combat where, like, you, I don't know, like, your hand turns into a chocobo head. And it, like, I don't know. I'm just thinking it was, like, just goofy stuff. But yeah, I think moments like that would be nice. I feel like we're probably going to get that a lot in, Teen Clive era before everything like completely hits the fan, you know? I have a feeling that there's not going to be a lot of moments like that. I think maybe at the beginning there will be, but I'm trying to picture, and I don't know how the story is going to go, so I can't say for sure, but I'm just trying to picture like what that looks like. Like, I feel like we would see that a lot. If we did see that, we would see that a lot with Clive and Jill.
Yeah.
Like Clive, Jill, and Joshua, like that trio specifically.
Or I would say Sid. I think if anything, Sid.
Well, he seems like a very charismatic guy.
Who I also think, I'm gonna stick to this. I think he's going to die. I think he's...
Yeah, you were talking about
I think he's done.
That,
if you look at his character profile on the website, it mentions... Because he's kind of the guy who created that hub you're going to keep going back to.
Yes. Yep.
You know, and it mentions his character profile. He created that hub so that dominance could die in peace on their own terms, right? Like, that was sort of his mission in life, or that's his outlook. Is like, you know, people who are dominants like himself, they deserve a place where they can, you know, die in peace, or, you know, lay themselves down. So to me, it's like, I feel like a character like that is just being set up to die. And it's almost like a layup, because if he gets to die on his own terms in that hub, then it's not even really like a sad death. It's almost like that's kind of what he wanted for himself. And, you know, we saw they showed some clips from the Benedicta fight. Like, he's really damaged and beat up. Like, he's coughing up blood. Like, he might be a dude who's already kind of walking to his death in a way.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm trying to remember in the, like, the little character bits that they have on the website. So doesn't Sid fight with, who's the dude that has the Odin dominant?
I think that's Barnabas.
Yeah, Barnabas, and then I think Benedicta is...
Is Garuda.
Is in, because I thought they were all kind of within the same faction. And I could be wrong, because I thought I remember reading it was either him or someone else that he was under that banner as well. Or maybe
we saw that.
Because it would be interesting if he like betrays them and then dies or something like that. But again, correct me if I'm wrong, I can't remember.
So here's what I'm able to pluck out, is that Sid and Benedicta obviously have a history together. That's implied in some of the gameplay scenes we've seen, as well as the character profiles. But we also saw that scene with Barnabas and Benedicta, and they're both butt naked. So there seems to be a history among all
some
of
drama.
That.
Maybe. Yeah, so I don't know. I was just I feel like there's going to be a lot of things in this story that's really just going to keep you on your toes. Like, whether it's, like, just plot twists or just, like, even just spicy, like, drama like that, if that even is a thing in this game, or even just, like, if we have, like, those slice of life moments, you know, I feel like I'm going to be engaged the entire time. Again, I won't know until the game comes out. Like, let's be honest, like, any game could look appealing and then come out and be just absolute crap, you know? But I don't have, you know, I have a very good, I don't see any of that with this game. Like, I think it's going to be incredible. Well, I think it has the potential to be one of the best Final Fantasy games of all time.
I think gameplay-wise, it's almost a shoe-in just based on what we've seen. I think gameplay-wise, it will be one of the best. Story is a high bar in the Final Fantasy series, so we'll see where it lands in regards to that.
Right.
But let me ask you, what character are you most interested in learning more about?
Oh, man. Barnabas has interested me.
Barney!
Just like his whole vibe, I guess, because I don't know what to make of him. Like, I don't know. You know, like, I don't know if they showed this at all, but, like, I feel like Clive is going to be fighting him at one point. Like, he's going to be fighting all these guys, but
yeah.
I'm interested in him. I'm honestly just most interested in Clive, funny enough. Hmm. You know, like, just to see, like, knowing that we're going to see three different eras of him, just to see where his story goes and, like, his journey. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, him, Barnabas, and I guess, you know who I'm interested in? The other Ifrit. The dude in the cloak. Because is that going to be just a new character? Is that going to be somebody that we encounter throughout our journey?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. I mean, we're not supposed to know anything, which is good. But, like, you know, there's going to be two Ifrits. Like, eventually Clive is going to awaken. But they're, you know, we see Joshua fighting this guy. It's like, who is this guy? Like, he can't just be some random schmuck, you know, off the side of the road. Like, you know, I'm kind of just interested. Like, I'm just curious. I'm like, yeah. So.
Yeah, there are a lot.
What about you?
For me, honestly, because I feel like just in the nature of theory hunting, I've dove so much into Clive and Joshua already.
Sure.
But I'm actually really interested to learn more about Jill. Jill really interests me.
Yeah.
Her backstory is interesting. Like, one, that she was separated from her parents. So
yes.
I'm sure there's some sort of medieval politicking going on there. And she got separated from her parents, and Clive's family kind of took her in to the kingdom. And, well, the details of that are pretty fuzzy. I don't know exactly. But I know Clive's family has a role in taking her in and giving her a place to, like, live and thrive. And, you know, you see those clips of her as a kid, and she just looks like, she looks like a happy child. Like, she's smiling a lot, she's laughing.
But then, now she's a lot more, like, stoic, serious.
That's the word.
I don't want to say now.
That's the word I was about to use, is stoic. Yeah. Because I think a stoic woman in Final Fantasy is pretty rare. Just to rattle off some names.
Yeah,
look at Tifa, Aerith, and Yuffie. I wouldn't categorize any of them as stoic.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
I love them all.
But love them all.
I agree with you.
Would not categorize any of them as stoic. Final Fantasy IX, you know, Garnet, I would not categorize her as stoic.
Yeah.
Or Aiko.
Or even Freya.
You know, or, oh God, how could I forget her? Beatrice. I wouldn't categorize her that way either. She's a little.
Yeah, even though, like, she's, you know, she is, like, she's that warrior, right?
But she has an attitude.
It's something about Jill's personality that is it's very different, and I love that. And that also makes me really interested to know, like, how did she get there? Like, what was her upbringing like?
And what's motivating her, right? Because,
I think on the website, I was reading, like, the character files or whatever, and I think it said something like, you know, I think something happens, right? We don't know what that is, because we haven't played the game yet, but her relationship with Clive and Joshua is torn because of, like, something tragic or tragic events that take place.
I think I shocked that whole Joshua getting killed thing. There seems to be a separation.
Which I think that's what's going to happen. I think, like, because we were talking about earlier with Joshua and the rebirth theory, I think he's going to die in the first, in the teen Clive era, and then they're going to find him reborn later. And that would make sense, you know? But yeah, Jill is... I'm really excited for Jill.
Because, again, you know, they, you know, Yoshi just mentioned there's going to be some romance in FF16, but that the romance is a backstory to the plot, which is another thing that's pretty unique. Usually a Final Fantasy game will put romance at the center of its plot. Even in 15, where you never see Lunafreya, the romance between Noxus and Lunafreya is still at the
center
of the plot.
Which is another problem I had with 15, but it is what it is.
But, you know, I and even when you look at FF10, FF9, FF8, FF7, like, romance is very central to the plot. I'm curious, because it's not going to be as simple as Jill's just motivated by her love for Clive. Like, to me, that does not seem to be what we're dealing with here. I want to know what...
Think...
Go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, do you think, like, because I think that their relationship will just be purely platonic. I don't know. So I'm curious as to what you think. Like, I feel like there could be, like, a love interest there, but I feel like it might mostly be, like the older brother to the younger sister kind of thing. I don't know.
Here's my prediction.
I don't know what Yoshida has said, if he said anything in interviews about it or not.
He hasn't really said anything.
Because that would be interesting considering, like, you know, a lot of these Final Fantasy games that we've played, you know, Cloud with Aerith and Tifa, Squall with Rinoa, Zidane with Garnet. You know, I haven't played FF10 yet, but Titus and Yuna, you know, I know that's a thing, right? You know, there's always some kind of love interest. So it would be kind of an interesting change of pace if their relationship was they deeply love each other, but it's not like a romantic kind of love, if that makes sense.
You know, I could see it going either way. My prediction is that teens platonic, 20s platonic, but I think by the time they're in their 30s it grows into something more. That's just my prediction.
I could see that happening, and that would make sense. That would make sense. This is something I was thinking of. Completely different topic. But because Clive has, as you see in the gameplay, right? Clive has all of these, he's acquiring these icon abilities. So you think by like the end of the game, he's going to be like the Avatar? Like where he just like... He can, like, just become any icon he wants, like, once he acquires them.
Well, I don't think he can become the icons. I think he inherits an icon ability.
He inherits her abilities, yeah. But what if I'm just, like, thinking, okay, so, like, just theorizing. What if there's some kind of, like, prophecy in the game, right? Some kind of prophecy that they foreshadow early on in the game where it's, like, there's some kind of harbinger of death. Some kind of harbinger of fate or whatever. And it's this person is going to actually bring some kind of apocalypse. And it's Clive. And because, and the way he does that is by acquiring all of the dominant's powers. And he becomes some kind of harbinger of destruction. And now we have to stop him. So, I don't know. Just a thought.
I've heard some rumors floating around. Well, I'll say one thing is for certain. Clive and Joshua's mother is going to be one of the villains in this game. She's sort of this betraying figure. And one of the things one of the things that gets them into trouble is going to be her sort of politicking with another kingdom.
Ah, I see.
What we don't know much about are Clive and Joshua's dad. Now, Clive and Joshua, they both look like the mom... But Clive and Joshua don't necessarily look alike. You know what I mean? So there's a rumor floating out there that Clive is like the bastard son of one of the kings.
Which would make sense why he didn't inherit a dominant and Joshua did.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense.
There it is.
That makes too much sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. See, I'm not claiming credit for that.
Why? Well, I mean, but yeah, but like, why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't? Not Joshua. Why wouldn't Clive inherit the Phoenix? Right? If he is the first, he's the firstborn son. He should be the next one in line. That makes too much sense. It actually makes too much sense.
You know, maybe that gives some insight as to who Dark Phoenix could be, right? Because maybe Phoenix is connected to the family line. Oh,
wait,
what up?
What if cloaked guy? What if cloaked Ifrit is the brother, is the son?
Swoosh. We got a swoosh.
He is the firstborn. That's why there's two. Why is there two icons of fire? Something is up there. I think I'm sold on it. That's my theory.
There could be, yeah, no, I,
that's the theory.
There could be something to that. There could be something to that.
I think so.
I dig it.
Man, it's exciting.
And again, this is one of the things that we talked about this a little bit in the pre-roll. This is one of the benefits of not giving people a lot to chew on.
Yes,
like showing
because
these
you get to have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, and... Okay, so like in the trailers, right? Well, so we see I'm just gonna call him Cloaked McGee, all right? Cloaked McGee, you know, we see him and he turns into Ifrit and it seems that him and Joshua are gonna go at it. But what if he's not there for Joshua? What if he's there for Clive? What if he's actually there for Clive? Because something is going to go on. It's going to have something. I feel like it's going to have something. It could have something to do with Clive's actual lineage as to why he's able to inherit all of these other icon abilities. What if he's actually there for him? Because it seems like he's there for Joshua, but I don't know. Like, well, I don't know.
All right, so I'll raise you one here. Something we see a lot in Square Enix's narratives, not just Final Fantasy, but it's that there's a force behind the curtain antagonizing the hero to lead him down a certain path. So maybe murdering Joshua wasn't for the sake of murdering Joshua, but was for the sake of pushing Clive down this path.
Yes. Because in the, I think it's the Dominance trailer, whatever, the voice is like, awaken, Ifrit, you know? Yeah, it's Clive is standing with the other Ifrit, and then Ifrit awakens in him. So I think you're on to something with that. But it's funny, because it's like, well, the motive is, if that is the case, the motive is still so unclear. Like, what's the actual motive? What's the endgame motive in all of this? Like, why are you trying to draw this out in Clive if that is the case?
And there has to be something, right? There has to be something, because like Yoshida is saying, in the time era of the 30s, that final time skip, Clive's going to lose that thirst for vengeance. What happens? Yeah. What does he learn, right? Like, what's the event horizon that completely...
Yeah, something
flips?
Tragic.
Yeah.
Someone's dying. Somebody died. Torgel, Joshua, maybe he loses everybody. Maybe everybody dies. And it's
maybe,
like, what else do I have to live for?
Maybe, you know, everybody dies.
Maybe everybody dies. Reconnect Final Fantasy 16. I don't know. You know? But it's... I don't know. But I think, like, I'm wondering if... I have a feeling that the majority of this game... I could see it going either way. Like, I could see, like, you know, having the flashbacks to teen Clive era and playing like a healthy chunk in his 20s and a healthy chunk in his 30s, or I could see it going, well, you play most of the game when he's in his 20s and then his 30s is like, that's like the climax, or it's like the Return of the King type of arc, right? I don't know, you know, that's kind of where I was going with that, because he can get to the point where he's so broken, and so it seems like the three time periods are set up like their own trilogies in a sense.
I was about to say that.
Like you have the first era, Teen Clive, where it's like, okay, you're introducing the characters, everything's kind of like, you know, you have more of your slice of life moments. everything goes to crap. Mm-hmm. You have this, you know, you have him in his 20s where now, you know, you're fighting for something and you're out for revenge, but there's so much conflict, right? Like that era is like the Empire Strikes Back of Final Fantasy 16. There's so much conflict within all the characters, and then their relationships are strained. Something tragic happens at the end, and then there's no hope. And then you go to the 30s, right? His 30s, where, man, Clive is, he's broken, he's beaten down, and it's like, what else do I have to live for right now? And then somebody comes, maybe it's Jill, who comes, picks him back off his feet, you know? Like, hey, like, the world needs you. And then it's that Return of the Jedi-esque arc. If that, or even, like, even in Final Fantasy 15, like, the Return of the King, you know, for the lack of a better term.
So, so we're looking at Hamlet here, right? Straight up. Lion King. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, sure. Nala shows up. Yeah. Hey, you have to reclaim your kingdom. You know, quit screwing around with these meerkat and this
warthog. And I know that, like, the whole reclaim your throne, reclaim your kingdom thing is such like a, if an overused, you know, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Theme, I guess, in a lot of stories, but I never get sick of it.
I was going to say,
I never get tired of it.
You know, that's such an interesting point.
It is inspired.
It's like the story.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's the story. It's like a cycle. It's the hero's journey, you know, as you're coming up. So it's like, I could easily see them doing something like that. Again, we've talked about, I think it's going to be kind of a bloodbath. I don't think all these characters will make it to the end. Particularly, I think...
As they should not.
As they shouldn't. It's wartime.
It's wartime, baby.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm still placing my bets on Cid, Hugo, and Dion all kicking the bucket. Torgel, I think, could go either way.
I think Torgel's done, man.
You think he's done?
I think that'll be like the breaking point. One of the breaking points for Clive, in my opinion.
I think if they don't kill him, they will at the very least try to convince you he's dead for a period of the game.
Yep. Yeah.
I could see something like that.
Because you were talking earlier how you were like, well, Torgel might awaken to the... might Fenrir. Be the dominant Fenrir. And so, like, he could die, and then... sometime in the climax, this giant dog shows up.
Fenrir shows up. Like, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Good boy.
I would cry, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I'd cry.
It's too perfect. It's too perfect. And I think, you know, I think this game has the potential to really set up there's so much potential to hit all of the green flags, like all the marks here with just good storytelling. Like they're doing everything right. And I'm just hoping, and I think it will be, but I'm hoping it'll be executed. I'm hoping it will be executed in the way that it's being presented to us right now.
Well, there's no excuse because they've been sitting on the game for a while. They've had a year.
They've been polishing it for a year straight.
Yeah. And it looks polished. I will say, like, especially the combat.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at like it right now. Look, it's just so...
it's... And, like, the fact that, like, you can... I really like that, like, you know, if you make a commitment with, like... if you commit, like, with, like, somewhere in the ability tree with your job points... and you're like, you know what? I kind of want to try something else. You can retract those job points and use them to go down a different path. I think Yoshi P talked about that.
One thing that was important to him was letting this game be as customizable to the player as you want. There's no like easy normal.
Somebody
hard
fact
mode.
Check me on that, by the way, because I don't want to tell y'all anything the false. But I thought I remember him saying
that.
I thought I remember him saying that you know, if you use your job points on like a specific ability, that you can like retract it at some point and then use them somewhere else if you wanted to. But you still have to earn them if you want to unlock more stuff. I could be wrong. Somebody fact check me on that. I could be wrong, but if that's the case, I think that's really cool because nothing is worse than being like spending like job points or whatever on an ability and being like, I kind of didn't want this. Now that I'm using it, you know? And but now I'm stuck with it. And now I have to keep farming more.
Well, again, and you know, they've made a point of saying this game will be very customizable to the player. Like, there's certain things you can equip that will either help make the game easier or will allow the game to be more difficult.
The accessories.
Stuff like that. Which, let me ask you, how do you feel about the very obvious influence of Kingdom Hearts on this combat? Between the shot locks.
With the shot lock? That was the first thing I thought of.
Like, there's a lot of that going on here.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it at all, you know? Like, I feel like it's... Like, I feel like it's a melting pot of just all these games with really fun... Like, all the... With combat from, like, Devil May Cry, Kingdom Hearts, like... I feel like it's a melting pot of just all these things. You know, you're cooking it up in the skillet and then seeing what happens, and now you have endless possibilities of things that you can do. I love it. The more combat variety, the better, because it never gets dull. You're always, you know, and you know, if you're out just fighting enemies or you're farming for drops or something or whatever. Like, it never feels redundant. You know, it always feels fresh with just all the things that you can do. Like, there's probably 100 different ways you can kill somebody in this game, and I'm for it, especially as a content creator and someone who streams, because it's like, well, I don't want to just do the same thing. I kind of want to do something that looks really cool and different, you know? Like, I think about that stuff, and that's, and even if I'm not streaming a game or something like that, like, even just playing it, it's like, you know, I don't want to just, like, find an opening, exploit the opening, mash X, and then that's it. I want to, like, experiment with different things. I want to do cool things.
Well,
that's what I love about reaction commands in Kingdom Hearts 2. Even though it's just a press of a button, I don't care. I like seeing Sora do cool stuff. I want to see Clive do cool stuff. You know? Like, that's just me. I'm very easily entertained. You just give me a press of a button, let me do something cool, I'm cool with it. But I do like depth as well. Like, I do like that.
Well, I will say, like, what I'm looking for in the combat...
It's going to have a lot of that.
The two things I want is, I want this game to do to me what any good Final Fantasy game does. Because any good Final Fantasy game is going to require some grinding. There's no way around it. It's going to require it. So what that means is
grinding, you have to... should not feel like a chore.
Yes. You have to make a combat system that is so good that I just want to go out there and fight random things. That's that's what you got to do. Secondly,
the gameplay loop.
Exactly. Remake was able to do that for me as of late. 15 did not do that for me.
Same.
Final Fantasy X does that for me. Final Fantasy 14 does that for me. Although grinding out in the field is not the best way to gain XP, but sometimes I just like to do it just to try out some new things. Something else that I'm going to need from this combat, not just incentivize me to go out and, you know, kill things. And this isn't necessarily combat related, but, you know, you take a look at all these landscapes they've created. I want the incentive to explore. And the incentive can't just be treasure chests. There's a treasure chest there and a treasure chest there. It's like, no, there should be like hidden towns and hidden settlements and, like, you know.
I was just going to ask, what does that look like for you? Because that's another issue I had with 15. The open world was very empty. There's really nothing to explore outside of, like, you know, the only time I would ever really catch myself going out to explore in the open world is if I took on, like, a hunt or as part of a side quest. You know, there wasn't really much to see. It was very empty. I was just going to ask, like, what does that look like for you
in this game? A prime example, a game that does it very well, is Breath of the Wild. Right?
Yes.
So Breath of the Wild.
Points of interest.
You see a waterfall and you don't just go, what a pretty waterfall. You go,
I play video games.
What's behind?
That is not just a waterfall.
Right. Let me see what's in there. Or you in Zelda, when there's that heart-shaped pond and you're like, if I go into that pond, what's in there? Things like that, where if there's something, a visual cue on the map, something that looks a certain way, that makes me go, I want to go see that. I know my mission is over there, but there's this thing over here. I want to go check it out. And I'm not motivated by a side quest. I'm not motivated by treasure. It's simple curiosity. Whether it be I get blessed with an aesthetic, or I get blessed with some side content, like a game that does this very well, Final Fantasy X-2, a game where there are cutscenes, some of the best cutscenes in the game, can only be unlocked out of sheer curiosity. There's no cues of, oh, do that side quest with Waka and you'll get the new Waka cutscene. Like,
sure.
Just things like that. That's what that would look like to me.
And you know what else? The exploring needs to be rewarding.
Yes.
Not just that there are things to find, and not just that, what was I going to say? And even side quests as well. Like, they need to feel rewarding, like progression. And I want to feel like I am really progressing, whether it's getting new stats, new abilities, new weapons, whatever it is. They need to be rewarding, because there are some games that I've played where the side quests don't feel like I have no motivation to do them, because like, why am I wasting my time doing this when you're going to give me almost nothing for it, or something that I'm never going to use? Or even like, it doesn't have to even be a material thing. It could be like you said with 10-2, it could be rewarding with like story, reward me with some story, some lore, cutscenes, whatever. As long as there are things to explore, and on top of that, that it's rewarding, that's what matters to me. Because we were talking about Breath of the Wild, and this is a hot take. This might be a hot take of mine. And maybe I just did some bad quests, but I didn't find a ton of the side quests in Breath of the Wild super rewarding.
No, I that agree with this.
Me. Okay, because I didn't know if it was just me. And so I loved exploring. There's so many points of interest. Like, anytime I would find a cave or find one thing, I would see something else. And then I'd find something, I'd be like, there's a dragon in the sky. Well, what the heck is that all about? You know, there's all these points of interest, but if it doesn't, you know, and like, that was fun, but like, if things do not feel rewarding, you know, like if side quests don't feel rewarding, I'm not gonna, I love side quests in games. But I need that motivation to do them.
Dude, when you eventually when you eventually get around to FF10, FF10-2 to me is such a gold standard of side quests. Such a gold standard. If not just in the mechanics of doing them, but in the rewards. Because again, like I'm saying, some of the best cut scenes in the game are locked behind them. We've already passed
even
go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, even with like a game I played recently, God of War Ragnarok, and I think 2018 did this as well, but there's a whole side, it's a whole quest line. It's purely a side quest. You don't have to do it, but it gives you some really, it tells a story and gives you some really interesting lore on, I won't say who, but like a very specific character and their past with another character. And it's completely optional. And it's, that, I'm like, man, like I love stuff like that.
Yes.
Because that whole area in the game is completely optional. The story doesn't even take you there. You just go there just from exploring, and then you find like all this stuff, and it's like, whoa, like this is really neat. I love stuff like that. And what I love is like it didn't, even if I didn't experience that, it didn't deter me away from the main story. Like it gave me more context to things that were happening, and it enlightened some things, but it didn't. But having something like that that wasn't a part of the main story didn't like hinder my experience, if that makes sense, if I missed it.
No.
You know, but it really enhanced it. So, yeah.
No, I'm with you there. I think that's a great way to wrap up Wishlist. I was going to say we've crossed an hour. So,
wow.
It is time to open it to the chat.
What they've been chatting up about.
So off the bat, Kevin Ribeiro says, I need hard bosses in this game. The type of bosses that give my hands carpal tunnel. Hey, that's a real gamer right there.
I'll pass on the carpal tunnel, but I respect it. No, seriously. And I think just seeing all the accessibility options as well, I feel like you make this game as easy or as hard as you want to make it. And I love that. If you want it to be hard, you know, if you want the equivalent of like level one, which could be like, I don't know, I was thinking about, we were talking about this earlier, like take out your party members if they give you that option. No gear, like put on an accessory that cuts your health in half or something. Like you can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Umbra's here in the chat says, hello, Gremlin. I mean, Andy, Why is Andy so low res?
It's our connection.
Yeah, we've got a little
something with our connection.
But I'm glad nobody noticed while I had the first display on. That's cool. I'm glad that worked out. Will's word says, I ask for prayer and well wishes. My gut is killing me. Brother, it is Cinco de Mayo tomorrow. You better get on it. Clean out that gut. Get some probiotics, man.
That's right.
But
that's
I do hope you feel better in all seriousness. Let's see. Kevin again says, when the game comes out, I'm keeping my eye on Sid. I don't trust him. I don't know about that. I trust this Sid.
He seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as he's not like type zero Sid, you know, like I'll be good. I do think it is interesting though. Cause you know, Sid is this recurring character in Final Fantasy. And it is interesting whenever, in some instances, he is kind of like an antagonist in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I just think that's interesting. I wanted to bring up something that Umbra said. And I'm curious as to what you think about it.
Shoot.
Umbra said earlier, I've seen some people speculate that Torgal becomes Leviathan since Leviathan is in the special edition Amano box art. So I'm just curious as to what you think about that.
So, okay, here we go. I was going to do a whole theory on this next week, but maybe I'll just dump it on this podcast. So I actually think...
A sneak peek.
I think Leviathan is going to be the final boss.
Interesting.
Because historically, the Leviathan is a symbol for the social contract between citizens and their government. The contract of, I'm going to give up some of my... what would you say? I'm going to give up some of my freedom and autonomy, and you, the Leviathan, are going to protect me. That's the social contract citizens have with their government. And the Leviathan, in a sense, is a symbol for that. Now, the Final Fantasy series hasn't always used the Leviathan that way. But seeing as nobody in the main cast has been assigned this summon and that he's on the box art.
You know, that's true. Yeah. That is true. We know who pretty much all the dominants are, I think. Mm-hmm. Right? Or all the ones that were mentioned.
Yeah. And that's why I could see it being Torgal, but I almost don't. You know, to me, it's like I could see it being Torgal through the process of elimination, but there's something about that aesthetic of a dog turning into the Leviathan that doesn't really just sit with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel that too. But it also, like, the whole, like, protector thing, it would kind of line up with the dog.
I could see that.
Man's best friend, you know?
I could see that, but... I mean, I don't know.
I like the Fenrir.
I don't know if I love the Fenrir's best friend, but it's another conversation for another day.
That is true.
But yeah, no, that's something that I have in mind. You know, maybe I'll do a full theory on it. Maybe I'll just clip this part of the podcast. I don't know, but
yeah,
that's something that I think we are heading towards. Clive the player. Jesus, Kai the player. He's got a great channel. Everyone should check it out. Says Clive reminds me of the protagonist from Infamous Second Son. That protagonist could absorb powers from other conduits. I'm out of the loop on that. Do you know that?
I've only very rarely dipped into Infamous, but yeah, I mean, like, I think there's definitely similarities there with I can't remember the protagonist's name, but like with Clive with just the icons, you know. Yeah, I mean, maybe I don't really know much about the story of Infamous, so I can't really say too much on that. But, yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, I know.
We'll have to take your word for it, Kai.
Porgal's partial transformation would just be Vaporeon. There you go. That's a happy medium.
We'll take
That's a happy medium.
We will take it.
How funny.
Kevin Ribeiro says the shadow figure could be the son of a king from a kingdom, and the power of Ifrit should have been his, but because Clive is a bastard son, the power went to him and not the shadow guy.
Yeah, we were kind of playing with that earlier. I think that's what's gonna happen. And I think, you know, it would be kind of interesting if it was like an Arden situation too. Where it's like, this dude really didn't do anything wrong. You know, he just like, this is just how the cards that he was dealt, you know? So I don't know. And that's honestly, like, in Final Fantasy 15, you know, Arden was one of the highlights of the game for me, and he's one of my favorite. He is probably my favorite villain of all time, you know. And just to see like a, because we don't really know like who the overarching antagonist of this game is going to be, but I want the villain to be well thought out and well developed.
That is such a good point. We're pretty much clueless on who the villain is. The best guess we have is Hooded Guy, but we don't even know anything about him.
Well, and Umbra makes a good point. It feels like a bit too much of Arden. Like, it should not feel just like Arden. Like, there's, you know, it shouldn't retread those steps too much. But I want the villain to be as well written, I should say, as Arden was. Because I think Arden was the most well written character in FF15.
Easily.
By a long shot. By a long shot. And so that's something I just love about video games and RPGs in general is their villains. Like, I want a good villain, and I want to, sometimes I want to struggle fighting them mentally if I can relate to them, you know, so.
No, I'm with you there, and I think that's what this game was going to need. I'm wondering if maybe that's where the Leviathan comes from, but yeah, I mean, every good story needs its villain. That's just the truth. Mm-hmm. Umbra mentions there's that one scene in a trailer where Time Skip Clive encounters Joshua with Phoenix Flames around him. Yeah, that's something that's always perplexed me. And what makes trailers...
Was it Time Skip Clive? Was it? I'd have to see it because I remember... I'm thinking of one of the trailers. And I remember seeing the wings come out of Joshua. Out of his back. But I thought that was...
Yeah, no, hold on.
Teen
He's
era
got
Clive,
it. He's
but I can't... Oh,
got
you got it?
It? Oh, I'm going to pull it up on the screen.
Hold up.
I'll let it cut off my ugly mug.
And also my 8-bit mug. That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, I think that should let everybody see.
Oh, this scene. Oh, yeah. This one. Okay, this... I was thinking of a completely, completely different one. Yeah, this is interesting. And I think, you know what, I think, like, we were playing around with the rebirth theory of Joshua dying maybe earlier on and then Clive finding him later and being reborn. What if that's what this is?
Well, what's interesting is that Joshua is the same age, which, you know, I immediately go to, this could be a nightmare sequence. I think it might be a nightmare sequence, or maybe Joshua is, like, trapped in, like, Dark Phoenix.
Yeah,
you know, because again, there's that rumor going around that when he dies, he's going to become this phoenix, and then he's like stuck in that phoenix state, and maybe he needs to be released from that.
Yeah,
but who knows, man? Mm.
Yeah, could also be. Or Umbra also said could also be time travel involved, but
Final Fantasy is no stranger to that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of. That's what's so great about this game is that there's so many ways it can go. Like, I'm glad they... I don't think they showed us too much. I think they showed us what we needed to see. And, like, I thought what they showed us with the story is just the perfect amount where it's like, oh, yeah, we... And me, personally, it's like, I don't know if I would have wanted to know who the Dominants were right out the gate. You know, I think that might have been something cool to kind of, like, discover. But if they're willing to tell you those things and reveal those things in the fashion that they did, they have some other stuff cooking that's going to be so much more glorious to experience without knowing.
And that's it. There's a lot of summons. And this is something actually, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of summons in Final Fantasy. I would love it if some of these side quests are to go meet some NPCs that are dominants of other summons, and maybe they're staying out of the fight or something.
Yeah, Cactuar, you know? Dominant.
Yeah. Cactuar, like, honestly. Oh my God.
who's the Cactuar Dominant going to be? That should be your next theory. That should be your next video. Who is the Cactuar Dominant?
Who is the Cactuar Dominant?
I love it. Who? What's the... Oh, I'm blanking. Carbuncle. Who's the Carbuncle Dominant? Like...
But, bro, I mean, when you think about it, dude, just from,
amazing.
Like, Hades, we get,
oh,
we don't
gosh.
Know about.
Yeah. How many are they going to have in this game? You know,
that's like, a good question.
Because I think it, you know, I really think that at least the story, it seems like it's going to be focused on the ones that we've seen, which are like, you know, the ones that like a lot of people I feel like know more than others. Like Shiva's very popular, Ifrit, Bahamut, Odin, they're all very popular. But I think it would be cool to like have like, as goofy as it sounds, like a Cactuar dominant, but not part of the main story. It's like a side quest. It's like some random guy you just meet, you know, who's just kind of there. I don't know. A fat chocobo dominant. Yes. That would be the fight. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, there's just a lot of options, man. Because there are some like more niche dominant. Look at me saying dominance. There's some more niche summons that not a lot of people know about, including myself. You know? Like, just off, I'm looking at a list now. Like, I don't know who Kuhata is.
Who?
Could be Kuhata. Kuhata from FF7.
FF7?
Yeah.
I thought that sounded very FF9. Maybe I'm just thinking of Kuja. But.
Then there's Golem, Raiden, Seraph, Siren, Unicorn.
A Knights of the Round. Like secret butlet. Just thinking.
That could be something.
Umbra says on a more serious note, while you're looking at those, and I think this could make sense too. I 100% believe the final boss main antagonist might be the dominant of Ultima. Which would make sense.
I could see it. I could see it. Kevin brings up a Chaos Dominant. Could see that too.
Jack Garland's secret boss. I'm for it.
You know, I'm surprised they haven't done a Strangers of Paradise expansion on FF14 yet. Like, I'm surprised Jack Garland hasn't come to FF14. I just did all the near raids. I finally got around to doing all of them. And they were crazy, dude. Like, they wrote their own, like, near story and just wedged it into fucking FF14.
That's making me want to play FF14 more. Because I love Nier a lot. It's just the backlog. The backlog, man.
The backlog.
Well,
this is a bad year for the backlog. Last year was the year.
It's the worst year.
Last year was the year to get your backlog done.
Yep.
Times have changed. Yeah. Okay, no, I vibe with this more. Umber saying maybe Clive getting all the powers together makes him the dominant of Ultima.
Yeah.
That
would make sense too. And we were kind of playing around, I guess, with that a little bit earlier, but more in the sense in the opposite direction of, well, what if he's some kind of harbinger of death, right? And like, you know, he's going to be out of control. I don't know if they would do that, dude.
There's something to that because in the Garuda fight, when you fight Benedicta, after you win, she looks at you and just goes, "What are you?"
Yeah.
You know, who are you? Uh-huh. Like, what are you?
Yeah.
So Clive very...
And I'm willing to bet that fight happens earlier on than later. Because then it's going to kind of instill that in your mind of like, well, what am I? And then that's going to be lingering throughout the game as you continue playing and fighting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see that happening. Tenfold.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Ooh, man.
We've been going through it. Anything else coming to mind for you?
Oh gosh, I can't really think of anything else other than I'm really excited for this game. I mean, there was a lot of theories that we talked about that I didn't really even think of until now. That's making me even more excited. And I'm already looking forward to just playing it, getting my hands on it. Like, I think I really just want to get my hands on it, you know, and just play it. Like, the game looks fun. It looks fun, man. It looks fun. The story is engaging me, and we haven't even seen it fleshed out yet, you know? Like, and that's, I'm so looking forward to it. And it's like a little over a month away, and that makes me just so excited.
Dude, yeah, like 6 weeks.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything else. I think we covered a lot.
I think we covered a lot of it. I guess maybe now's a good time to wrap it up.
Sure.
Dude, thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This is a pleasure. Glad to be back in the lodge and talk some FF16, which was a lot of fun, man. This is a lot of fun.
I'm sure we'll be talking about it again after the game comes out. I'll definitely want
Yeah.
to hear your thoughts on it.
Oh, yeah.
Without giving too much away, you will be back in the lodge at the end of the month. So
Yes,
we're
I
gonna
will
have
be.
some nice fun conversation. Not gonna spoil it yet, but you can definitely look forward to it. Kevin's chiming in here before we wrap up, says Benedicta talks to Clive as if he doesn't belong, like he was never meant to have this power, not to meant to be a player in this game of the dominance, which leads me to lean into that bastard son theory. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 'cause and also, okay, I know we're wrapping up, but like I'm just
This
thinking
happens all the time. Don't worry about it.
yeah. Well, I'm just thinking too, like that line, what are you? It's not just referring to, the power that he's possessing. No, like what is he? If he is a god, like a son out of, that's out of wedlock or whatever, or like if he is like this, if he is who what he is, it's gonna have deeper implications than just like what am I on the outside. But it's like, yeah, like what is he? Because that whole theory with that, and gosh, I'm sticking with Cloak guy, Cloak McGee
Cloak
being Joshua's actual blood brother, and it, like that. Ah, man. I'm really, gosh, I want it now. I want the game now, man.
Well, it's gonna
I
be
want it
here. It'll
now.
be here before we know it. Again, it's breaking the mold of Final Fantasy. They're trying some new things, which we always like to
Yeah.
see. But again, dude, thank you again for coming on. This was a great episode. A lot of love for everybody who hung out in the chat. And
Yeah, thank
yeah,
you for having me.
dude, it's my pleasure. We'll be back with another podcast on Sunday. Little sneak peek for those of you who are tuning into this episode. We're going to talk about the connections between Ava and Kairi. If you know, you know. Anyway, wrap it up. Thanks for hanging out. And if you're on Twitch, I always forget to do this, but not this time. If you're on Twitch, we are going to raid Empowered Muse. She's starting soon, so good. We can get her a little boost to get us started here. But again, thanks again for hanging out, everybody. And Andy, thank you for coming into the lodge, dude.
Thank you, man. This was a pleasure.
Peace.